This is the Toronto Today podcast. I'm your host, Greg Brady.
640 Toronto presents Think Tank, the breaking stories you care about, facts and opinions that get you through the day. Now, let's meet the guests.
All right, hang on tight. We'll take this all the way up to the hour at 8 o'clock. Some reaction to the big announcement by Honda yesterday. It's always interesting when Justin Trudeau, Doug Ford are in the same room and handling questions. And we'll play you some emotional audio about a senior grad at University of Southern California. But I think it speaks to the larger issue of what we see in our streets, what we see in our own universities right now. We'll get to all that coming up. Lindsay Maskell joins a strategist, former advisor to Premier Dalton McGuinty. She's back on Think Tank. Great to have you.
Good morning.
We've got Roy Green, host of The Roy Green Show on the Chorus Radio Network. You'll hear Roy tomorrow between 2 and 5 and Sunday between 2 and 5. Roy, I always enjoy our chats. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Roy.
And Ben Mulrooney, our guest, 640 Toronto contributor. He hosts Toronto This Weekend as well. And I'll let people in on our little plan. You and I are going to go start working out together. We're going to consummate this this relationship, but more with yeah. workouts than any other method, I think, Ben.
Yeah. Well, we've tried to go for a beer, and that hasn't worked out yet, so let's try the gym.
Let's do the opposite. Yeah, we're going to tighten those abs instead of letting them out a little bit, okay? We're getting an inseam done instead of an outseam. Let's start with this. Speaking of fashion, I think it's news. I know it is when someone is asked to remove themselves from a house of politics and they choose not to, and everybody has an opinion on it. We'll see if this was a one-day incident, but yesterday, independent Ontario MPP Sarah Jama from Hamilton Centre wouldn't budge, and she wasn't going to budge on removing the keffiyeh that she was wearing. She wasn't going to budge when she was, in essence, kicked out of Queen's Park. Here's her reaction after the incident.
Another member was able to wear today a political piece of clothing that he named as such as being political and was not asked to be removed. We've had members across this chamber wear clothing in support of Ukraine and other international issues. And this is an issue that's affecting people here as well. There are Palestinians that actually work in this building. There are Palestinians who are affected by decisions by this government. And if Doug Ford, our own premier, has even said that the ban shouldn't exist, they should move a motion in line with that.
Okay, there's a lot there. Let me start with you, Roy. Again, we've seen people kicked out of the House of Commons. You're not allowed to call anybody a liar. You're using a prop. There's this, there's that. But this was, in essence, and I'll use the phrase, a Rosa Parks moment for Sarah Jama. Circumstances very different, but she wasn't moving, and the speaker said, I was not going to find a way to have security physically remove her. It should be noted for people that don't know, she has a disability and uses a wheelchair. So, Roy, there's the practicality of this, and there's the optics of it as well.
Greg, the Speaker of the Legislature has responsibilities established and supported by the legislature. Speaker Ted Arnott reached the conclusion that the wearing of a keffiyeh contravenes the rule that items of clothing or other symbols displayed to make a political statement is out of bounds in the seat of the provincial government. The rule is not specific to the keffiyeh, and it does not single out any identifiable group, even though MPP Jama accuses the anti-Palestinian racism exists in the legislature. Look, the political parties representing Ontario have lined up against the speaker's decision, making, I think, his job untenable. If MPP Jama will not abide by the speaker's decision and the parties do not support Mr. Arnott, I would say options are really reduced to the MPP being ordered out of the legislature until she abides by the rules order, or if he doesn't have the support of the political parties on this issue, Mr. Arnott's only position and option is to resign the position as Speaker. The noisy public exchanges is another case of politics trumps rules as politicians and their parties scramble for the high ground of public support.
It's I think people are walking and chewing gum at the same time on this one, Lindsay, because I even talked to a couple MPPs not from the Conservative Party yesterday, and they say, hey, it's a distraction. We got business to do. We've got practical things we need to do for the people of Ontario. But then I see their bubbles on the text moving, and then they're giving me five paragraphs of opinion on it. So they've got an opinion on it. This is theatrical in a way, but it is, to Roy's point, it's created a divide between Doug Ford and the Speaker. It's created a little bit of a fissure in the Conservative Party, and it's seen as a way to gain political capital right now for the NDP. It's all of those things.
Yes. I mean, a lot of it's unfortunate because now what's happened is this has become performative, really, and MPP Jama is getting what she wants of the attention and focus on this. Look, this is a rare thing that all of the parties agree that the speaker's ruling happened. The thing that is unfortunate is I actually think there's another way to fix this. Having worked at Queen's Park, when you know the rules, there are other ways, and especially when you have a majority conservative government, you have one member who keeps voting against that. At some point, that woman is not going to be in the House. They can fix this. There are other mechanisms to fix this. But all the parties agree that that the motion shouldn't have happened. And we actually should allow religious stress and freedom in the legislature. And this is unfortunately turned into a way to cause a big destruction.
Ben, beyond the obvious in that it's created a wonderfully catchy phrase, JAMA drama. Beyond that, how do you view it?
Look, you know, I may be an outlier on this because you said everybody has an opinion. I'm all over the place because I just don't care. I just don't care. I think we have bigger issues in the province of Ontario. I think Ontarians are not concerned with this. It is theater. I would have let this go. Like, if she wants to wear it, if anybody wants to wear it, let them face the voters. I believe it's not an inclusive message. And if you need props to sell your story, to sell your message, but then you're the carrot top of the legislature. And so to me, I would have just let it go because there are far bigger issues in the world and in Ontario. Now, that being said, look, John Fraser, the Liberal MPP, took issue, and I believe he's trying to capitalize by saying that the premier is the premier of the entire province and not just the leader of his party. And I agree. I 100% agree. And he represents everyone, including the Jewish community, for whom this is an inflammatory thing. And so, I don't care. I don't care.
But why did Ted Arnott care? And that's to your point. Does he not know how there's a real breakdown in communication to point out? Because if Doug Ford does not know Ted Arnott's doing this, and if Ted Arnott doesn't know that Ford's going to go, just leave her alone and let her wear the keffiyeh, then they got to have better lines of communication. There's a breakdown somewhere. And it's been rare, Ben. You and I have talked about this with this party almost 6 years in. They've generally all walked together outside of vaccine mandates for some members. They've walked together and there has not been division. They got a bit of an issue on that front right now.
Yeah, listen, I think Doug Ford's doing the right thing. He's not whipping his vote. He's letting he's going to let his party vote the way they want. And that includes Jewish members of his caucus or people who represent Jewish constituents. So, I don't see this as an issue that's going to stick to Doug Ford. I think he's doing what he should do, which is staying out of it.
But Roy, you're not
his position clear. There you go.
Roy, you're not sure Ford is doing the right thing here. You feel I don't want to put words in your mouth. Should he have backed the speaker on this?
Well, I'm saying it's as much an issue surrounding the speaker as it is the MPP. That's what it's become. And the question is, do we have a speaker who is empowered to make rules for the legislature? That's the job. And if it's now regressed to the position, the place that it's in, the speaker has two choices. Walk or enforce the rule. That's the only position, one of those positions he has to take if the political parties are aligned against him. The question again is, and I said this before, we now have noisy public exchanges on this. And I think, again, it's a case of politics trumping rules as the politicians and their parties are scrambling for the high ground of public support. It happens over and over and over. Remember, I told you last Friday, that the EU's top court ruled an employer may ban the wearing and display of religious and cultural items if the employee engages with the public in his or her work environment, as long as the prohibition is applied evenly. This isn't just an Ontario issue. It's a growing national issue, and it is already an international matter.
Yeah, it is. And if social media didn't exist, if we were sitting here in 1986, I think the world would be a lot different and a lot more. There'd still be theater, but a lot of the practical work would happen.
Social media opinion, very strong. If you have a look at X/Twitter, I know that don't necessarily represent a cross-section of the public, but it's there. And I take Ben's point, but this has now moved to a point where it is a discussion issue. It is a matter that people want to become involved in because you can identify with the issue.
Let me move to this Honda plant announcement yesterday. I'll start with Lindsay here. $15 billion Ontario. Alliston gets an electric vehicle plant. $2.5 billion invested from the federal government in terms of tax credits. But basically, $2.5 million of taxpayer money goes right to Honda to get this going. I want to play you a clip from Justin Trudeau, and then we'll ask you what your thoughts on are on a big company like this getting such a massive subsidy. Here's the Prime Minister.
A whole ecosystem will be built with 4 new manufacturing plants in Ontario, including an EV assembly plant, a standalone battery manufacturing plant, and 2 plants for battery components. These investments will create well over 1,000 well-paying manufacturing jobs, as well as many, many construction jobs, and of course, jobs all across Ontario and the country for auto parts suppliers.
Okay. It's a bit of a wager, Lindsay, and people kind of hesitate and they tense up when a lot of public money is given to a very rich corporation. And I'll bring up the amount, $5 billion from both levels of government to add 1,000 jobs. Sounds to many like it's $5 million a job. Like, that's the math. So these jobs have to become careers and there has to be a lot of spinoff. What would you say about it?
Yeah, this is a real moment of deciding if Canada is going to be a place where we're going to be the, you know, EV center of the world, have the new future of automotive design, or are we going to let it go to China? Because they are moving faster and making a cheaper EV right now. So are we going to let it go there, or are we going to make it Canadian? Now, we also do have to compete with the U.S., obviously, on the Inflation Reduction Act. And so that means big investments from our government. My main concern is making sure that they get it better than they did with Nexstar.
Yep.
Nexstar just kept coming back for more money. And when we have a real immigration issue right now, the fact that we're not fighting for every single Canadian construction job on the install, we need to not be spun by companies and fight for, you know, that basically we need to have labor conditionality on these kind of investments. But I think it's a great investment. It's definitely where we need to be going. Change is hard for some people, but this investment will pay off.
Ben, it's a great point Lindsay makes. There's got to be a commitment to Canadian workers, and that will come in time. But not doing anything may not be a better option. We all know when automotive factories close in the United States, somebody looks at a governor or a president or a senator and says, how could you let this happen? We're facing that in Oshawa just 5 years ago here in our province, and it looked like it was going to go very, very badly. What do you think about yesterday?
I think it was a great day. I think it was a fantastic day. Ontario reasserted itself as the center of the automotive universe in Canada. I think the fact that 2 levels of government of representing different parties coming together and finding common cause was fantastic. In the back of my head, I'm always reminded about the giant bank bailout in the United States about 20 years ago. Or 15 years ago, when massive amounts of public money went to these banks and immediately bonuses were paid to executives with that money. It was disgusting because they didn't pay attention to the details. And so I completely take the point, protecting Canadian workers, ensuring that these jobs go to Canadian workers at every single step is paramount. Otherwise, it will be viewed as a waste of money, as opposed to what it really is, an investment in the future of transportation, which could bolster this province for generations.
Roy, is it a bet worth making? And I bring this up because in Mexico, I'll give you the list: Tesla, Volkswagen, Mercedes, BMW, Ford, and GM. They build most of their electric vehicles in Mexico. And the only lesson to learn is, obviously, we don't want labor as cheap or working conditions like they have in Mexico. Ours are better, and we pay our workers more. But there's always that risk that if it doesn't stay here, it goes somewhere else, and there's no jobs at all.
Yeah, Greg, the question is, and I agree with Lindsay and Ben, it can be a tremendous boon to this province and to the country. But the question is whether Honda can be more successful in production and sales of EVs than Ford and Tesla and other manufacturers who've scaled back their investment and engagement in electric vehicle production and sales, at least for the time being. And what are the safeguards protecting the $5 billion in public monies, $2.5 billion from Ontario, $2.5 billion from the federal government? Honda says all its vehicles globally will be electric by 2040. Okay, let's see. But let's make sure that whatever public monies are directed toward underwriting private automaker costs in Ontario are not just pulling the lid off an eventual bottomless pit financial support demands, as in, either you give us more money or we'll relocate. It's an important issue to make sure that we've got it covered.
Roy, a lot of great NFL stadiums and NHL arenas have been built that way. Blackmail, that's called.
Yeah, but you tell me, you show me an NFL franchise that is failing.
No, I know. They just say, hey, we can make even more money if we go from St. Louis to L.A. or we go from Houston to Nashville. Yeah. It happens on a, I mean, let's face it. Toronto was trying to grab their own franchise way back when. Let me move to this. And it comes to family medicine. And I guess hope on the horizon, the headline in the Globe and Mail, more graduates will pursue family medicine in Canada, up from 2023. But let me go to Ben on this, and I'll lay this stat on the audience, Ben. This is from theglobaleconomy.com. Canada has 2.73 doctors per 1,000 people. And this is in 2021, so this is kind of squeezing out of the pandemic. Austria has 5.35. Norway has tons more. Spain, Germany. You name your European country, they've got more doctors per 1,000 people. And I don't know how we change that. What are your thoughts on where we're going?
We've got a lot more doctors than we think. They're just driving. They're working for Uber. There's a bunch of doctors in this country that could be working if we were able to fast track some sort of harmonization between the skills that they got in another country and the need that we have in this province and in this country. I had a realization a couple of days ago that my dog has better access to medicine than I do when I took her down to the vet. For pink eye that she had. We have to stop putting our heads in the sand and thinking that our system is the end all be all. And you're not going to find a lot of people in this country disagreeing with the dream and the goal of universal healthcare. Across the political divide, you're going to find support for that. But the end all be all is not the single payer system that it clearly has been stretched beyond its limits. The goal is healthcare for all. And I think we have to shift the paradigm in our thinking to how we can fix this, because throwing more money at this problem is not the solution. Well, I think we really have to expand and be innovative and bold and take risks, because the alternative is the crisis that we find ourselves in.
Lindsay, I think Ben has it. And even more family doctors will not do much to reduce wait times in emergency rooms. It won't do much for people waiting for a scan or a diagnostic. And it won't do much for people who want a surgery sooner than later and they fly somewhere else or they drive to the States. A family doctor won't change that.
Well, it will certainly help with reducing the flow in and out of emergency rooms and better scheduling and adding competition into the system. Just more doctors is going to be better for our system. So not only do we have doctors that aren't working full time here, we have many, many Canadian doctors that aren't doing full hours, full shifts is what we would expect. We also, as Ben mentioned, foreign trained physicians that are here in the country. But the craziest thing to me is the number of Canadian nationals that go to medical school outside of Canada and fight hard as hell to get a job to come back to Canada. And we make it very difficult for somebody who is born in Canada. A friend of mine that went to medical school in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And why wouldn't you want to go to school there?
No snow. You don't need to shovel snow there on your way to class that day. Yeah.
Impossible. It is easier for somebody to come as a temporary foreign worker than a medically trained professional to come work in Canada when they are a Canadian, which is sad. But more doctors, more competition in the system is going to be better for our system.
Roy, the amount of times I'm listening to your show. Yeah, go ahead, Ben, quick. Yeah.
So one last thing about it, having these doctors want to become family doctors is great, but the burnout rate of family doctors in this province and in this country is astounding. The amount of paperwork per patient, I think it's like 3 hours of paperwork per 1 hour of working with a patient, is driving these people to early retirement. It's a top heavy system with outlandish bureaucratic responsibilities that is foisted upon these people that makes it so, yeah, sure, you want to be a family doctor, but you're not going to be one for long.
Roy, I got a couple minutes here for you to stretch it out. And Ben brings up the paperwork. I could be driving around listening to your show, and I think within a 10-minute span, I'll hear the phrase from you or one of your guests, red tape. Red tape, red tape, government red tape, regulations. It constantly gets in the way of things we want to accomplish in Canada.
Well, it does. The bureaucracy confronting family physicians, particularly, as Ben just pointed out, is massive. But let's go back to the beginning here. Family medicine is under huge stress. 6.5 million Canadians have no primary care physician. That's the first link, as I keep saying on the air, in the healthcare chain, massively compromised across the country. Now look, just a few months ago, the news was that new medical grads were not interested in family medicine as a career. Now the tune is changing, at least somewhat. But what does a few hundred or a few thousand new family doctors really mean as far as addressing that huge 6.5 million Canadians without a family doctor crisis is concerned? Look, older doctors, besieged by bureaucracy, Ben's right, and limited pay are retiring faster than the general population. One option, of course, it's constantly talked about, is the licensing of international medical school graduates. And I agree with that as long as they're able to pass the examinations placed in front of Canadian medical school grads. And remember, Canada is in last place as far as access to primary care is concerned of the 10 countries surveyed on this issue, according to a release of the survey just last month. I think with the current story, we have a headline, not a solution.
Yeah, that uptick might not even cover this wave of family doctor retirements that we know is happening right now and we know is only going to grow. I got to leave it there. Thanks so much, Lindsay, Ben, Roy. All of you have a great weekend. Ben, Roy, I'll be listening tomorrow.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Today podcast. We drop the highlights of The Daily Show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. Don't forget, you can hear the entire show on the radio, at home, on your smart speaker. Ask Alexa or say, hey, Google, play 640 Toronto or Toronto Today. You can hear us on between 5:30 and 9 weekdays on 640 Toronto. Have a great day.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.